As Episcopalians, we pride ourselves on not having to leave our brains at the door when it comes to matters of faith. In my 13 years as a priest, I've had lots of people tell me that's what they most love about the Episcopal Church and how different it is than the denomination they grew up in. I too love the fact that we can ask questions here, have doubts, and find our own way to God with all the wiggle room provided by this branch of Christianity. Where I was raised as a Roman Catholic, the path was narrower, and explanation more than exploration was the guiding principle. This is how it is, we were more or less told. And much of it was fine, helpful, but not all of it. The gay thing, for example. The church's teachings on that kept me in a private hell for about 6 years of my young life. So I appreciate that we can engage with our faith here in the Episcopal Church and come to our own unique relationship with God without judgment, without always being told what to think or believe. I must say, however, that all the leeway we provide here can sometimes produce, in me at least, a lazy faith. The sense that whatever doubt or skepticism we bring through those church doors, along with our brains, doesn't need any more work or conversion. We have that wonderful motto in our church, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, you are welcome here. The welcome part is what we focus on, but we cannot neglect the aspect of journey in our faith. We're not done. Our relationship with God and one another is a process, a path along which we sometimes stumble, sometimes stride. If we're truly serious about having a relationship with God and Christ, the journey can't end with just feeling welcomed and accepted and good. There's more discernment, more honest work, more grappling to be done. And we risk hubris, excessive pride, if we think we already have all the answers. I bring this up today because the Transfiguration story is one I have always struggled with. Did it really happen? The blinding light, the booming voice, Moses and Elijah making an appearance. It makes me nervous. I am much more comfortable with Jesus as a man of social justice and compassion who welcomes the outcast. So when this pyrotechnic extravaganza, this transfiguration, shows up each year on this last Sunday after the Epiphany, on the cusp of Lent, I worry that mine is a lazy faith. I don't want to be challenged by Christ's divinity. Yet if we truly believe in God and that Jesus Christ is God made manifest, then why should dazzling lights and booming voices be a problem? God can do anything. What's the big deal? So the question then comes up that I would rather avoid. Do I truly believe in God? Now, maybe I'm the only one in the room here who has this problem, and the rest of you have your faith neatly tied up in a bow and are all set. But I don't think so. If not this story, surely there is another one in the Bible on which your spirit snags, or some theology or tradition that challenges your faith. One difficulty I have in believing the Transfiguration story is that Jesus tells Peter, James, and John to keep it a secret until he's risen from the dead. How could they have kept it quiet for 3 years? If I'd been there, everyone would have known before we were even down the mountain. I would have gone on ahead of Jesus and told the very first person I met, "Guess what I just saw?" Just so I could be the one with the hot gossip, the inside scoop. In today's first reading, everywhere Elijah and Elisha go, Elisha gets taken aside by the local prophets and told conspiratorially, Did you hear that your mentor is leaving you today? Yeah, I did. Shut up. Those local prophets were little groups of gossips too. It's everywhere in the Bible. Jesus constantly tells those that he heals in Mark's gospel, don't tell anyone I did this for you. But do they listen? No. Back to my main point. The lesson and challenge for me in the Transfiguration story is perhaps the same one for you, in whatever way your faith is tested. You can't fit God into your set of preferences. God is greater than what your mind can comprehend or your faith can wrap itself around. And the story of the Transfiguration comes around every year to remind us of that. We're like Peter, confronted with a dazzling vision of Jesus flanked by Moses, the lawgiver, and Elijah, the prophet. Peter's first instinct is to contain it. Rabbi, let us make three dwellings here, one for each of you. It's too much for him. He's terrified, so he wants to put them each in their own little house or little box. But you cannot domesticate God. You cannot take a presence that exists beyond time and space and stuff it into a little container of your own predilections. This is my faith and what I believe, and God does not exist outside of it. That's not going to work. Yet we do it all the time. Because like Peter, we are terrified by the greatness of God. Or we want to continue coasting by on our lazy faith, unchallenged and self-satisfied. Or, by not checking our brains at the door, we feel like we have to choose between our rational mind that tells us such miracles cannot happen, and our faith that tells us anything is possible with God. And that's hard, because it means letting go of our ego, admitting we don't know, and kneeling before God in all humility. As we like to say in this business, the opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is certainty. Be a little less certain, a little more awestruck, and your faith may grow. It could be that this Transfiguration Sunday comes just before Lent for a reason. Two reasons, actually. First, we receive this visual reminder of Jesus' divinity right before his story takes a dark turn for the next 6 weeks, so that we can keep in mind the fact that it will turn out well in the end. Because there's more to our existence than the reality of suffering and the cross that we are about to witness, and that we actually witness each day in this world. The second reason I believe this story comes up on the cusp of Lent is because it's an invitation to let God out of the tiny box of our lazy faith. Let this season of Lent resonate for you with one big, I don't know. And yet let yourself humbly kneel before that dazzling vision that so confounds or terrifies you. Implicit in the very meaning of the word transformation is the movement from certainty into the unknown for the sake of being changed into a new thing. Invite that into your life in some way in these next 6 weeks. Ponder the question Jesus asks his disciples in the chapter before today's Transfiguration. Who do you say that I am? I close with a poem and a quote, just like the preachers of the old days. The first, a poem by Emily Dickinson, you may have heard before, but I have never connected it to the Transfiguration until someone pointed it out to me. Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. Success in circuit lies. Too bright for minds in firm intent, the truth's superb surprise. As lightning to the children eased with explanation kind, the truth must dazzle gradually, or every man be blind. Alec Wilkinson, a staff writer for the New Yorker magazine for over 40 years, just published a book called A Divine Language, Learning Algebra, Geometry, and Calculus at the Edge of Old Age. In an article for the New York Times last Friday, he wrote, "I am only a mathematical tourist, but my experience has led me to believe that mathematics is rife with intimations of a divine presence. I am grateful to have a sense of mystery returned to me by mathematics. I am pleased to have been given, from an unexpected source, a reason both humbling and human to feel that there is more to life than I might believe there to be." So by all means, bring your brain through those doors each week. But don't check your sense of wonder, awe, or humility back there. Bring those in too. And maybe together, grappling with these questions of God and love and salvation, we will one day come to embrace the unknowable more fully. Amen.